mountains. We all face them. Base Camp Live will equip you to conquer the biggest mountains when raising the next generation. Each week, you'll hear from culture watchers, thought leaders, and storytellers who know the tools you'll need to summit the peak and shape exceptionally thoughtful, compassionate, and flourishing human beings. Welcome to Base Camp Live, and now your host, Davies Owens.
We're in the studio today with a great friend of mine, Hal Whitman. Hal, I think we've known each other for 35 years-ish.
Maybe more.
Maybe even more. I remember picking you up as a excited 16-year-old driver to go to church youth group. And I don't know why your mom ever let you in the car with me, but it was pretty exciting to think we've traveled that many years together.
Grew up in Atlanta together at the same church.
That's right.
Now sitting here in Boise, Idaho.
Who would have thought? And we're both in education world here. That you're founder and head of the Wilberforce School up in Princeton, New Jersey. That's crazy. And neither of us really have a southern accent. That's even more strange. I don't know how we shed that off along the way. But we've had some great fun reconnecting. You've been out here visiting. We both live in a world of students and parents and trying to just share this whole idea of raising the next generation. You have a very interesting life trajectory, and just to kind of share a little bit of your story before we jump into these things. We both grew up in Atlanta. You went to the premier legacy private school. I went to kind of the second runner-up, half-decent private school out at Woodward. I'm sorry, alumni, I'm just saying that. And then you got this amazing opportunity. You went to Princeton. I mean, the Princeton University. I did a little research. Princeton founded in, 1746, considered, fourth greatest college in the U.S.?
Old school.
Old school. Literally, Ivy everywhere,
definition
right?
Definition of old school.
Yeah. Right. Some big names from Princeton. Woodrow Wilson went there, I think. Who else was other than yourself?
Jonathan Edwards was president of Princeton.
Yeah.
You have a lot of leaders from politics and other realms.
Jeff Bezos went there, didn't he?
Jeff Bezos was there.
Brooke Shields
was there. Even Brooks.
I mean, that's pretty amazing. John Kennedy. I mean, so you've gone from an amazing private school in Atlanta to arguably one of the very best. If you ask the average parent where you want your kid to go to school, probably Princeton would be up there in the name. And then if that wasn't enough, you had to go in and get a master's degree at some place called Wharton, which I think is a pretty decent school, right?
It's a good business school.
Good business school. So why am I saying that? Because I like bragging on my friend Hal. You've been very successful, and you've had all of these wonderful opportunities in front of you. You could probably do anything you wanted to professionally. But something happened. You were telling me a little story kind of in your life story. Tell me a little bit about kind of your journey and what your five-year-old might have said to you there. I'm curious about the story.
Well, I ended up at Princeton as an undergraduate, and as a Christian student, I was interested in also being able to articulate my faith to my classmates and to be able to be a disciple of Christ in that setting and be able to make disciples as well. And ended up back at Princeton, involved with campus ministry in at the university, and we had kids. And
that always changes
everything.
Changes
your life.
Yeah.
And I had two at the time. We have four now. But
how old are your kids, by the way?
They are now 17, 15, 13, and 11. And but at the time, this is 13, 14 years ago, we had a five-year-old and a three-year-old. And I had a conversation with my son. He was in a little preschool, and he had a conversation with one of his buddies, and he said, "My friend Patrick said we should hate our enemies." And I said, "Well, that was an interesting conversation. Were you talking about loving your enemies?" And somehow they talked about the Bible had come up, and my son was confused. He said it was just strange that Bible and spiritual things came up at school. And he said, in his own five-year-old way, "Sometimes I get my church plans and my school plans confused."
Wow.
And
this is from he's pre-K at this point, or kindergarten?
Kindergarten.
Yeah.
I think it was pre-K, actually.
Yeah.
And he was articulating that there was already a sort of dualism that he knew was the reality of his life. There's school is this area over here, and church and spiritual Bible, and it's weird if they ever cross paths.
And this is coming from a five-year-old.
Right.
And you're thinking at this point.
I'm thinking, wow, there's this these two paths that don't meet in his mind already at such a young age. And I'm a parent. My primary responsibility is to raise my children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, help them to become disciples of Christ for their whole life, and to develop their gifts and use them for the kingdom of God and all those things. And if he thinks most of what his time is spent in school,
right,
7 hours a day, 35 hours a week, has nothing to do with anything spiritual, that's going down a path that is a little alarming.
Yeah. Well, you know, I began the process of introducing you by telling a little bit of your own journey through education, because I think it's interesting that you had kind of the best of, I mean, by most people's standards, private school, top private school, college prep, great college, great graduate school experience, and yet there was something lacking. So when you think about your five-year-old was bringing up, he was already noticing there's this dualism that's in our culture today. So one might think you would just say, well, I want my kid to have all those great things I had, but you kind of went a different direction.
Yeah, well, going to Princeton helped me realize that there is an incoherence to that education. I'll say it's a very fancy degree, and there's some wonderful people there, some good professors, good, neat people, but the education itself, honestly, was pretty incoherent.
Now, wait, you got your 25th anniversary coming. Should you be saying that?
I hope no one's listening.
You may have just dropped a couple ranks in the alumni pool by saying that. What do you mean that it was incoherent?
I'll give you an example. I, by chance, as a senior, took a class, and we read Thucydides' Peloponnesian War. And my major was public policy. And up to that point, we had only read current articles on those issues. And when I read Thucydides, I said, wow, the people have been thinking about this for a long, long time, these issues. And I could have graduated with a degree from Princeton in public policy without ever having read anything prior to 1950 about the way people have wrestled with these issues and questions. And it points to the fact that education, progressive education, has become something that values what's current and it devalues what is past.
So parents listening may think, well, there's an assumption. I think that Princeton, they started – they were the fourth college in the United States. They've got to have this thing figured out better than anybody. And yet you're saying that they actually have – there may be further out in terms of walking away from the richness of what makes education – what makes it effective. I mean, by gutting everything old.
Princeton used to do what we as classical Christian schools do now. And Princeton no longer does it. And that's what's so exciting to me about classical Christian education is there is a recovery of what, for some reason, due to philosophy and progressive views of education, has been abandoned.
Yeah, so and this is interesting to me too. You had this discovery, and then you didn't just flee to the suburbs and the Midwest to start a classical Christian school. You said, I'm going to be kind of almost, I don't know if there's any spite in this, but like right in the shadow of Princeton, you start a school in a place that doesn't need any more schools. There are like school. How many schools are like in the 10-mile radius
true.
Of Princeton?
Princeton is an education town, and education is the town idol. And there are really well-regarded public schools. There are a lot of really well-endowed, respected, independent private schools, prep schools. And so you got to be a little bit crazy to think that you could add anything to the educational
and
environment.
And not just a new school in the midst of endless legacy schools, but then to start a school that's a Christian school. And again, if depending on where you are in the country, this isn't like a great idea. Let's go start a Christian school in Princeton. How did that go over?
Well, it's a very post-Christian culture with a lot of education. And really what drove us is our kids. Mm-hmm. We want to have children who are we wanted rigorous academics and integrated with intentional Christian discipleship. That's what we wanted, and that didn't exist there. And what we found in classical Christian education is that is the model for that integration of rigorous, deep, rich academics and intentional Christian discipleship character development that's integrated into the definition of what we consider education to be. And in fact, that's really what's happening is that the other schools really in our area and probably in your area really just have a different definition of what education is.
So how would you explain that? I mean, what is well, what's different really?
In a government or public school, it's education as really there's probably best way to say it is education to create people for the workforce and also standardized tests are the standard for judging that. A lot of the other schools are college prep, focused on college prep as an end, whereas our mission is mature human beings who are flourishing and who are equipped well academically and spiritually to serve in God's kingdom. So it's a higher goal, but what happens is that you get the other lesser goals into the bargain.
So you don't have a sign up front saying we're your college prep solution. We'll get you in the best college. And yet the reality is that the output of your students, they're really ready for college.
We like to have that conversation with our parents coming in and say, we are not a college prep school. And there's a little gasp. Oh, no. What are we doing here? And
find
we say,
the door quick.
We are actually aiming for something higher than that. But the fact is that if you're aiming at something higher, if you're aiming at human flourishing, if you're aiming at a rich, deep education that gets beyond the bubble tests and education is competition,
yep.
Education is job preparation, you actually get people who are better prepared for the workplace, who are better prepared for college, and better prepared for life.
And I love that because you're giving them what you're saying, your parents are walking in with a kind of a basic goal of just getting them into a decent college, and you've represented the entire opportunity as something way bigger. It's human flourishing. And so I think you probably confront the stigma, and I wonder in Princeton, when you say Christian education, most people roll their eyes. It's sort of just mediocrity. Great. You may love Jesus, but you can't add numbers. I mean, how do you fight this sort of misunderstanding?
In our area, we have the advantage of the fact that there isn't much Christian education out there. So people really don't even know what it is.
Which isn't the case in the South where we're from. Every other church has a school bolted onto it, and it's
right.
It's cute and sweet, but they're probably not going to get very far academically.
Right. So a lot of them are looking at the other schools that are not Christian and so forth. And some of them are coming from similar places we did with our son, who were realizing there's something missing from the approach at these other schools. And when we talk about that integration of faith and learning and that intentionality of doing them both, because it's happening whether we like it or not, during those school hours, formation is happening, not just intellectual, but spiritual and character. It's happening whether we want it to or not, and we might as well address it intentionally, thoroughly, rigorously, in a way that honors God. And when people hear it and think about it that way, sometimes it's really for the first time, and they think, oh, well, I moved here for the public school because it's, you know, I pay taxes and, it's supposed to be a good school. But now that you're now that you've explained it that way, I do want my child to have an integration of faith and learning rather than having a dualism where, we do spiritual on Sundays and we do academic here, and that doesn't it's a recipe for disintegration.
So you would say to someone who's evaluating school, what is the most important thing they should be looking at? Because it's easy, especially where we're from, to be razzle dazzled by the high schools that honestly look better than most college campuses. I mean, they have rock climbing walls and Olympic-sized diving pools and endless arrays of opportunities. But those things are not the most important. What do you say to parents?
You know, we've had the advantage of always not having a very good campus. And so when people walk onto our wherever we've been meeting, whether it's been in a church or another place. Now we're in a Jewish community center, which we share with another gym. And so we're not presenting a campus, and there's some really fancy, nice campuses. But when they walk through and observe in the classrooms and they see what's happening there, they realize why we exist.
Yeah.
And they see what it is that we've been talking about.
And so the fruit of this is character development, it's human flourishing, it's academics that would well position them for any prep school. I mean, if you're going to get your kid ready for Princeton, mm-hmm. you'd still want your child in this school.
Absolutely. And so here's an example, and that is if you're preparing for an AP English exam and you're cramming Hamlet and English literature into your head in order to be able to get a 5 on a bubble test, it's a totally different experience than to read and perform Hamlet with your classmates.
That's a great example. Yeah.
And to live it. That's a different and better education.
And yet we fight all the time, parents. We don't fight parents. We talk to parents. But we discuss with them the fact that we don't have APs, and they think there's a deficiency right out of the bat. You don't have an AP, something's wrong. And that's because that's a currency we've been taught 20 years ago
and,
with the right question.
But it's really not complicated. If you explain it with the Hamlet example, for example.
Yeah, it's a great example.
I think parents realize, that actually is better. And we all know when you do cram for an exam,
it's gone by Monday morning.
It's gone.
Yeah, sure.
And you check the box and you move on. Whereas this form of education, you actually learn more, you retain more if you do Hamlet in that way. And it's a richer experience, and it actually contributes something to your life besides.
Well, and it's not just because you know the play cognitively, it's because the richness, the tapestry of the story, and the virtues and the vices that are presented become part of your understanding, your frame of the world. And it's about shaping you. It's a level you can't get by rushing through Spark Notes and cramming for the test.
Right. Yeah. So all those schools that you recited that I went to and so forth, there was a lot of that education time, a lot of it, that was wasted. Mm. There was credentialing there. Mm-hmm. There was certainly rigor in, you know, you're with
big conversations and professors.
But actually the big conversations were what were lacking. Mm. There was a lot of competition, mm-hmm. a lot of performing well on
the bubble test,
the bubble test, on the papers, on those things. Yeah. But when you abandon the pursuit of the true and the good and the beautiful, when you abandon education that is seeking those things in history, in art, in these things, you're abandoning what we call the great conversation,
right,
that's been happening for centuries and millennia, that you become a part of when you read old books.
Today it's the great text. You just send a little small bit of an information.
Right.
You can have a conversation about anything.
Right. Right.
So I want to – I know time is short. I'm curious. Your sister went through a similar kind of educational experience in Atlanta, ended up with a son who was kind of going in the trajectory of a college prep school. And tell this story because it's fascinating because he ended up at the school where I was head of school, and just a huge discovery under your sister.
Well, this is actually how this was my introduction to this form of education, is that my sister, who's a couple years older, had a son that was several years older than my kids.
Yeah.
And he was in first grade at this prep school that my sister and I went to, and everything's going fine. But they diagnosed him with ADHD, and they said, we want to put him on Ritalin. And my sister said, no, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And someone who went to one of these schools, classical Christian schools, said, you know what? My son, they said the same thing about him, and he went to this classical Christian school and he learned impulse control and he's fine and he's thriving.
This is crazy. I'm thinking people are listening. They're thinking, well, certainly there are kids that really do need medical help in that way. But we are in I think Leonard Sachs, we're talking about him and some of is a medical doctor. He says that we're about 90 times more likely to prescribe something in America than like in Italy and other countries. So we know that's a trajectory we're on. But I'm curious, what was it in particular? It wasn't just, I assume, because we were reading Hamlet. I mean, what was it? What happened over there?
In second grade,
there
was an emphasis on habits. There were activities that in which they learned to attend to a subject.
Mm-hmm.
There were small classes. And that intentionality around habits in the classroom really made it where he didn't need that. He didn't, and we are over medicating, and some people do need it, and so forth. But it wasn't.
It was actually it's counterintuitive because you take a kid who seems like he's high energy, and you put him in a place with structure, which seems like it would constrain him or confine him. It actually provided safety and a clarity about what the expectations were, and he thrived in that.
He flourished.
He was one of the first graduates from the school where I was. I mean, and a great success story.
Right.
So I love. I think it's just an important reminder. Again, this is not just cognitive expertise. It's forming the whole child, even down to the level of their habits, which is amazing.
And I'll tell you, the rest of the story is important as well, is that not only did he flourish, but my sister and her husband were then surrounded by a community of people who are like-minded in seeking to integrate faith and learning in their families.
Yeah.
And that was a great family setup for them. And it really was a source of renewal of their faith.
Yeah.
And that happens
over and over. And I hear all the time, well, I was looking for a school for my kid just to check the box, you know, back to accomplishing my kid getting an education to get to the next level and do the bubble test and all that. And now all of a sudden I found, wow, education's way bigger than I expected. It's forming them as a human being. And what's more, bonus, it's actually this community that I just inherited as part of this season in life where we're doing life together. So these are amazing stories. I mean, it's fun talking to you in Princeton, New Jersey. Totally different part of the world, totally different set of needs and expectations, perhaps in the minds of many people and parents, but the solution is so the same.
I have to tell you, it gets more exciting each year for us. We started our high school 3 years ago, and as we've gotten into the high school years, it gets even richer. Mm. And as I think about what our students are reading, in ninth grade, they're doing American letters. And so they read the Declaration of Independence. They read the Constitution. They read sections of the Federalist Papers. They read great literature from American writers. And when I think about what they're doing and what I did in high school, at a pretty well-regarded school, I just think, what a waste of time so much of what I did in school was. They are reading these primary sources from American history and then European history and then ancient and medieval that were taken for granted for centuries that were part of what an education ought to be and which we have thrown out a few generations ago and are now recovering. So I feel like this education is the education I wish I had and that it's a privilege that my children get to have.
So as a footnote, I know that you had the privilege of spending some time with Chuck Colson. Mm. I know he's also – he's not with us here anymore, but was a big advocate of this form of education. What – just kind of closing reflections on your time with him and maybe just things that he spoke on regarding all of this.
I tell you what, it's funny you mentioned him. His son went to Princeton, and he went to Brown, and he knew somewhat of that education and what it was missing. And one of the gifts that he gave me after I served working with him for 2 years.
You weren't in prison with him, right?
I was not in prison with him.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
That's right. Just to clarify.
Okay,
yes,
yeah.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. His parting gift for me when I left was a series of tapes that were the story of philosophy.
And interesting.
It was essentially the history of ideas. And Chuck was the one that introduced me to this idea of the history of ideas. It was a concept that had never occurred to me
in all of those amazing schools you went to. They never told you this.
The idea of a history of ideas had never been presented to me or occurred to me. And he is the one who said that's what he learned after college as well, because he had a post-Christian, post-classical education.
Yeah.
Once he became a Christian, took classes. He had a guy that tutored him from Gordon Conwell Seminary that helped him to understand the history of ideas and philosophies and how they affect our faith and its application today and help our students to understand the postmodern context and the ideas that they're swimming in, the cultural ideas that are dominant.
And these
right
are
now.
Eminently practical things, because people may not know who Chuck Colson is. He served Nixon's you can explain who he is.
He was special counsel to President Nixon. He was a brilliant man, and was very driven and part of that hard-bitten, driven Nixon White House.
Pulled him into the Watergate world.
Was caught into Watergate, went to prison, and through that whole ordeal became a Christian and started a ministry to prisoners that's now around the world in 180 countries.
So he wasn't some stuffy philosopher guy who got excited about this ideas thing you're talking about. He's an eminently practical guy who just said, you can't navigate the modern world and not have some principled anchoring point of who you are and where you are in relationship to God and the world around you. And
we got into this mess that we're in terms of our modern culture for reasons. There are reasons. There are steps that were taken along the way. And it's helpful for as part of students' education to understand how we got here.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Hal Whitman, it's been great to have you in the studio today. I'm so good to reconnect with you. I'm glad I don't have to carpool you around. You can drive now. And you're running.
Thanks for the ride.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks to my mom for that. But what a great thing to hear what you're doing right there in Shadows of Princeton and just your great perspective. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Further conversations with you. Thanks again.
It's a joy.
All right, take care.
Thank you.